So this is in our ongoing series about the Goswamis. This is the last of the original six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And it has to do with Srila Jiva Goswami. I think we'll be well within our time limit this evening. Jiva Goswami was born about 1511. He was the son of Vallabha. Vallabha was the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And as a child, Jiva Goswami, he played with murtis of Krishna and Balaram. This is Chaitanya and Nityananda, the same as basically Krishna and Balaram. And he actually played with those murtis. And we find in the lives of pure devotees, this is more often the case than not. They grew up in a family where the deities were being worshipped, where their fathers and their grandfathers worshipped the deities. And it's a natural inclination on the part of a child to want to imitate the parents. So when the parents are worshiping the deities, the child is there. He wants to offer the incense. When they offer the incense, he wants to offer the lamp. When they sit down and play the harmonium and drum, he wants to learn. In fact, Prabhupada said his father taught him how to play the madanga. And his mother wanted him to be successful in a material sense, and so she insisted that he go to university and so on and so forth. But his father kept saying, he will be a great devotee of Radharani. He'll be a great devotee of Radharani. And Prabhupada always talked about his father in such warm, tender, loving terms. And he credited his father with having set the scene for himself to become a pure devotee. When he was a child in Calcutta, you know, the family lived in that neighborhood. And he wanted to, his father, I believe, took him one time as a child to Jagannath Puri, where they have the famous chariot festival. And then Prabhupada, he wanted to do something in his neighborhood along those lines. And so his father actually called some carpenters. He paid for the construction of a little chariot that the kids could pull through the streets. And in those days, Calcutta was called the Pearl of the Orient. In those days, around just after the turn of the century in the 1900s, Calcutta was one of the most beautiful cities in all of Asia. And still, if you go to Queen Victoria Memorial and the areas around Chowringhee, you can see what was once the glory of the city of Calcutta. And so, presumably they didn't have potholed streets and smog and all the things they have now. So Prabhupada would organize several years in a row as a small child before going to school a local Rath Yatra, and his father would completely support him in the construction and in the cooking and serving of the feast and in the chanting of kirtan. So it's often the case, and of course we remember Maharaj Parikshit. He also grew up amongst the Pandavas, and his uncle was Yudhisthira. His granduncle was Yudhisthira, his grandfather was Arjuna, and in that association he also would play with Radhakrishna deities and follow the lead of his parents and grandparents in worshipping those deities. So that's often the case. When Jiva was 3 or 4 years old, his uncles resigned from their ministerial posts at the court of Aluddin Hussain Shah. Hussain Shah ruled in Bengal from 1493 to 1519. And I think CE stands for Christian era, because there's another system called Vikramaditya era of calculating time. So as we know from the stories of Rupa and Sanatan, after they met Lord Chaitanya, first of all, Rupa gave up his position, and then Sanatan gave up his position. He was jailed, and then he escaped from jail, and eventually he also joined Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And incidentally, Lord Chaitanya's appearance time on this planet spanned the years between 1486 and 1534. So naturally, his father, Anupam, died, actually, after being with Rupa Goswami and getting instruction for 10 days. Anupam, or Vallabha, Vallabha was his initiated name, Anupam was his given name, he actually died. But the two uncles, the other two brothers of Anupam, Rupa and Sanatan, eventually to Vrindavan. So Jiva was, you know, as soon as he heard that was his lifelong ambition, to follow in the footsteps of the family elders. And some of Jiva's life story is told in a work called the Bhakti Ratnagara. The author of that is Narahari. And he writes about Jiva Goswami and the Bhakti Ratnagara, hearing that his father and uncles had made their decision to work in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the young Jiva desired to join them also. And it's not certain whether Jiva Goswami ever met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally. Some people say that he was around when Lord Chaitanya first met his uncles, and that he met him as a very, very small child of 3 or 4 years old. And other people say that he, in fact, never actually met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in person. But in his early life, he had a dream. And in that dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to him dancing in the midst of the Sankirtan party and invites Jiva Goswami to join in the Sankirtan party. He was overwhelmed by feelings of divine love at that time, and soon thereafter left his home, which was in Bakla Chandra Dwipa. Bakla Chandra Dwipa at age 17. And you'll notice this is also a trend too. Many of the future associates of Lord Chaitanya, like we were talking about Raghunath Das, they went to Lord Chaitanya through Nityananda. You know, Nityananda, he said, Chaitanya is my property and no one can take my property without my permission. And Raghunath tried 3 times to join Lord Chaitanya, but his family always captured him and brought him back, captured him, brought him, captured him, brought him back. So finally, when Raghunath went and asked Lord Nityananda if he could get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Lord Nityananda actually gave him access to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Lord Nityananda is the personification of the spiritual master, and he's the mercy potency of the Lord. So even though he's big and strong, he's just a pussycat at heart. He really wants everybody to join the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if you approach him, you will be able to access Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he met Nityananda Prabhu at Navadvip in the home of Srivas Pandit, and he received his blessing. Incidentally, Nityananda's wife was named Janava, and she became, after the departure of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, she became a great, great Vaishnava leader. Sometimes people ask, what is the role of women in your religion? And Janava was one of the great, great preachers all over Bengal, and she had many, many followers who were men after Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda left the planet. And we'll talk about a little bit about her later. So while he was visiting with Lord Nityananda, Nityananda showed him all the places of Gura Lila around Navadvipa. As Vaishnavas, we believe that the most sacred place is Vrindavan, where Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago and he exhibited his childhood pastimes. But equal to Vrindavan is the place where Lord Chaitanya appeared in the area of Navadvipa. That's considered to be another Vrindavan. And the spiritual world, the ultimate, the highest planet in the spiritual world, which is Krishna Loka, there's a section there for Krishna and there's a section for Lord Chaitanya as well, in that highest, ultimate planet in the spiritual world. So as I said, it's unclear whether Jiva ever met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he got his mercy, obviously, through Lord Nityananda. These are the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, and you can see all the auspicious markings on them. These are the markings of the personality of Godhead. Lord Nityananda is non-different from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so you see all these auspicious markings on his feet. It says here, with fatherly affection, Nityananda touched Jiva's head with his feet. He showed incomparable mercy toward Jiva, lifting him from the ground and embracing him tightly. And this is funny to me. He says to Jiva Goswami, after keeping him there for some time, he sent him to the west. He says, hurry off now to Braja, which is another name for Vrindavan. That is a place the Lord has given over to your family. And again, we're quoting the Bhakti Ratnagara from Nahari. It's almost like Lord Nityananda is giving him it as the family business. You know, his two uncles are already there. Go join your family in the business. But it's not a commercial business. It's a transcendental business of restoring all the places of pastimes, established in the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and writing many, many books on the science of devotional service. So on the way, between Bengal and Vrindavan. Bengal is on the east coast. Vrindavan is north, central north. It's about, probably more than 1,000 miles separates the two. But in between is Kasi, which is present-day Banaras. So in order to complete his studies, Jiva went to Kasi. He studied under Madhusudan Vachaspati, who was a student of Sarvabhauma. If we'll recall Chaitanya Lila, Sarvabhauma was the scholar that when Lord Chaitanya first arrived in Jagannath Puri from Bengal, he ran ahead of the traveling party and he entered the Jagannath temple. And as soon as he saw Lord Jagannath, he said, Jagat, Jagat, and he fell unconscious. And Sarvabhauma, who was the greatest scholar of that time, he had disciples all over the place. And here it says he had one of his main disciples in Benares, came and he saw this young, beautiful, good-looking sannyasi passed out unconscious in front of the deity. And he thought that he will not be able to maintain his vows of celibacy unless he studies the Vedas. And so he took him to his house. He had him brought unconscious to his house. And then he proposed that, let me teach you the Vedas. And Lord Chaitanya had no objection. However, after 7 days of continuous instruction, Lord Chaitanya had not uttered one word. And so Sarvabhauma was a little exasperated. He said, do you understand what I've said? And Lord Chaitanya replied, he says, I understand the Vedas very well, but your commentaries for the last 7 days have been indirect. They've actually distracted from the main point of the Vedas, which is Krishna. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedascha sarvayaham veda vedanta vid veda kride veda. I am the goal of the Vedas, I am the compiler of the Vedas, I am the purpose of the Vedas. So anything other than taking one to Vedanta or Krishna is a distraction. And then there was a discussion, and finally Sarvabhauma just prostrated himself before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and surrendered. So after that, Sarvabhauma and all of his disciples would have been Vaishnavas, and Jiva is getting instruction from one of the disciples of Sarvabhauma in Benares. And here's a little map. After Benares, Jiva then proceeded to Vrindavan. And these are all the places, the forests, the major forests of Vrindavan, all the pastimes of Krishna Lila. It's said to be an area of 32 square miles. And you see the watermark of the lotus there imposed behind it. It's said to be in the shape of a lotus flower, just like the ultimate planet in the spiritual world is also shaped like a lotus flower. In the spiritual world, Krishna's abode is called Gokula Vrindavan. No, I'm sorry, Goloka Vrindavan. Go means cows, loka means places. So in that highest spiritual planet called Goloka, there's many, many cows. And when Krishna comes down and descends, it's basically a replica of the spiritual Goloka, but it's called Gokula. Gokula. And that also means place of cows or family cows. Or Kula means like family or something. So it means Maharaj Nanda's business was taking care of the cows. So that was also common on the earthly version of Goloka here. Raja Mandala. In fact, Mandala means some sort of a design. And so the design is that of a lotus flower. So Jiva Goswami arrived in Vrindavan at 1541, at the height of Vrindavan's glory. It doesn't mention Jiva having ever gone to Puri. Apparently he met Nityananda in Navadvip. He may have met Chaitanya as a small child when Chaitanya was in Bengal. But it does not describe Jiva Goswami's having gone to Puri, unlike Rupa and Sanatan. And even Raghunath Das spent 16 years in Puri. And then when Lord Chaitanya passed away, he went to Vrindavan. He spent 41 years in Vrindavan. So many of the devotees spent time with Lord Chaitanya in Puri, and then he sent him to Vrindavan. But it appears that Jiva Goswami went to Benares, and then he arrived in Vrindavan in 1541, which was that at that time, Vaishnavas were pouring into Vrindavan. There are many, many places of pilgrimage that have been excavated. The first Sri Lokanath, the first pioneer, he alone found 333 places. So you can imagine with all the other Vaishnavas and their intuition and their scriptural study, how many other different places of Krishna's pastimes were excavated. So there were Vaishnavas pouring in. It was from a jungle. There were devotional places. There were temples being constructed by kings like Mansingh and sponsorships, and it was really, really becoming revitalized and flourished. So Jiva Goswami went and lived with his uncle, Rupa Goswami. He got initiated by him. There was a story, I'm not sure what the details were, But Vallabhachari, who's also a great Acharya, he has his own line in Sudhu Session, which mostly is on the west coast of India, and they're called Pushtimarg, the path of devotion to Pushti. And they control the famous Natwar temple, which I think is in Rajasthan. So Vallabhachari, I believe he went up to, I forget whether it was Rupa or Sanatan Goswami, and it was probably Rupa Goswami, and he suggested how Rupa Goswami could improve one of his books. He said, I can suggest how you can improve one of your books. And Jiva Goswami got quite upset at Vallabhachari, and there was some little discussion there. And then he was somewhat censored by Rupa Goswami. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were very humble, and they had no interest in establishing their own personal reputation. They had no ego. And Jiva was egoless also, but he didn't like to see his uncle slighted, and he didn't like to see the path of bhakti they were espousing slighted. So on a couple of occasions, he would step out and defend them when they would not even defend themselves. And there was a particular instance, I think it's described in the next slide here. Yeah, it is said that a certain Digvijay scholar, eager to amass mundane prestige, Digvijay means conquering, they used to have debates, and the loser would sign a paper saying that the winner had defeated him, and then he would collect all these papers and get a reputation. Sort of like the World Boxing Association, you know, you have your record of, you know, so many wins, so many knockouts, and here's the champ. So he was eager to amass mundane prestige. He came to Rupa and Sanatan to get their signature as an admission of defeat in debate. Jiva's gurus conceded defeat without any argument, and the arrogant scholar proclaimed them to be nothing but ignorant fools. He then asked Jiva to also sign such an admission of defeat. Jiva was kind of on the way out. He went in and then on the way out. Jiva, however, decided to take on the puffed-up Brahmin in debate in order to silence his scurrilous tongue. It is said that not only did he silence him, but he made him unconscious. He made him unconscious. He would ask a question which the scholar was unable to answer, and then he would answer quite elaborately, and then he would refute that answer, and then he would go back and refute that answer while the scholar sat speechless and eventually just passed out. This erudition of Jiva. Jiva Goswami was the greatest scholar in modern times, the greatest scholar in the last 1,000 years. So, in this way, he preserved the integrity of his spiritual master's reputation and demonstrated the ideal behavior of one who is a guru devatma, or one who recognizes the spiritual master to be his worshipable deity and source of life. But Rupa Goswami was upset. He was upset, and Rupa Goswami banished Jiva Goswami from his company, thinking that, you know, it was a display of unnecessary sort of warrior spirit. But then Sanatan reconciled them. He went to Rupa Goswami and he reminded him of Lord Chaitanya's principle of being kind to every jiva. And it was kind of a joke. It's kind of a play on words, because jiva means individual souls, and Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is meant to deliver all the jivas. So Sanatan Goswami kind of went, and I guess he kind of broke the ice and broke the tension by making a little joke. And he said, well, Lord Chaitanya says we're supposed to be kind to all the jivas, so why don't you just cut jiva a little slack, you know? After which they reconciled, you know, and they went back together. In fact, Jiva Goswami carved, I think this will come up later, he carved a little 8-inch tall deity. Rupa Goswami carved a little 8-inch tall deity for Jiva Goswami. That's the Damodar deity, and then later on Radha came along, and that was installed in the temple where Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami were staying, and where Prabhupada spent many years preparing to come to the West. So after the disappearance of Rupa and Sanatan, and Lord Chaitanya, of course, had already disappeared in 1544, which was 2 years after Jiva had arrived in Vrindavan, Jiva was established as the topmost teacher of doctrine in the Sampradaya. He engaged everyone in the worship of Krishna through teaching the truths given by Mahaprabhu himself. And this is a nice painting nice painting of Jiva. It said that the Emperor Akbar, the great Muslim emperor, had great regard for Jiva Goswami, and it said he provided all the paper that Jiva used to write his books. He wanted, what can I do? And so they said, well, there's a shortage of paper in Vrindavan, so he had delivered reams and reams of paper, or whatever it was that passed for paper in those days. And it was Jiva Goswami who enunciated exactly the philosophy of Achinta Bheda Abheda Tattva. You have two extreme views, where Shankara says that the living being and God are one. There's no difference. The living being is like a bubble. God is like the ocean. When the bubble pops, it merges and becomes one with the ocean. So in the liberated state, there's no distinction between the individual soul and the supreme soul. And neither do either of them have any personality. So that's the extreme view of monism. On the other hand, Madhvacharya, who is also a precept in our own disciplic session, he had strict dualism. He said that there is God and the living beings, and they're eternally separate, and they'll never be one. So he had them as being completely different, and Shankaracharya had them being as one. But Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, as enunciated by Jiva Goswami, is a nice reconciliation of both those points of view. He says God is Beta, he's one with the creation, but he's also abheda, he's also different from it. Having created this world, he's one with it. At the same time, he has his own individual personality, he has his own world, which is entirely separate from it. It's just like a fire may be sitting in one corner of the room, and at the same time, 30, 40 feet away, we say, oh, the fire feels good. Well, we're not physically in the fire, but we're feeling the energy of the fire in the form of light and heat. So you can say the fire is simultaneously one with the room and separate from the room. In other words, it's pervading the room by warming the room, and every person in the room can say the fire feels good, but at the same time, the fire is localized as well. So God is all pervasive because he's all powerful, and in fact, he's fully present within each and every atom. But if someone says, well, God is the universe or God is the world, that's limiting God. That's actually offending God because he's far more than his creation. You can make a flower garland, but if someone says, you know, when is the flower garland, what is that all about? You know what I'm saying? I mean, flower garden is just one thing you do and amongst so many other things. So yeah, God creates millions of universes, but that doesn't mean he is the universe. He is the creator of the universes. The universes come from him. They have no other source than him. But he also has his separate existence. And so that's called Achinta Bheda Abheda Tattva. And that's the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A couple of institutions that Jiva Goswami established in 1542. The Vishwa Vaishnava Raja Sabha, the World Vaishnava Association, which is still meeting, incidentally. And then the Rupanuga Vidyapita, which is an educational facility for Gaudiya Vaishnavas to study the works of Rupa and Sanatana. Incidentally, if you go to Vrindavan, there's the Vaishnav Institute in Loy Bazaar, and they have many, many ancient volumes of Vaishnav and Bhakti literature from the Goswamis and from even earlier times. There's said to be 10,000 books. And many books have been lost. Many books have been lost. But it's said that in the Vaishnava Institute in Vrindavan, there are 10,000 books, 10,000 manuscripts, which have to do with Krishna Bhakti. And very few of them, in fact, are translated in the English language. One of the things that the ISKCON devotees who know Sanskrit or Bengali do is they translate these books. As again, I mentioned, he was known to Akbar. His erudition and spirituality were so famous that the Mughal emperor became his ardent admirer and donated paper for his writing. Now here's the Radha Dhamma temple. This is where Rupa Goswami was staying and where Jiva Goswami joined him in 1451. And this is where Prabhupada stayed, I believe it was 7 years or 9 years or so. He was writing his Gita, he was writing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he was going up to Delhi to sell the books to pay for the printing. The printing was done in Delhi, and most of the people were in Delhi, so he would go up from, it's about 135 kilometers, I don't know, by car it takes 3 hours, I don't know what means of transportation Prabhupada used, but he would go up to Delhi once a month to consult with the printer, and the printer was a nice enough fellow that he would print everything on consignment, so Prabhupada didn't have to pay anything up front, but then Prabhupada would have to go out and sell the books in order to pay the printer. So Prabhupada was doing that, commuting between Radha Damodar and Delhi. Now this is the deity. It's an 8-inch high deity. It's called Damodar. And that's the deity that's worshipped in that temple. The Goswamis, the heirs, the descendants of the Goswamis maintain the temple. But I believe ISKCON has one permanent room. I believe the room where Prabhupada stayed is sort of a permanent shrine to Prabhupada. And is maintained in the same way that it was when he was there. Now this is Janava, the wife of Nityananda, who I mentioned became a great, great guru with many, many male followers after Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda left the planet. And the stature of Jiva Goswami was so great that she, who was preaching in Bengal and heading up all the preaching in Bengal, made the trip twice to Vrindavan with all of her followers. And remember, he's the leader of all the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan. So twice she came, 1,000 miles with all her followers, just to sit down and spend time with Jiva Goswami. Very, very impressive. Jiva Goswami was training up certain people, 3 people principally, in Vrindavan. He trained them up and he sent them back to preach in Bengal. Srivas, Narottam Das, and Duki Krishnadas, who later became known as Shamananda. He gave Srinivas the suffix Acharya, so Srinivas Acharya. He gave Narottam the suffix of Narottam of Thakur, so he became Narottam Thakur, and then Duki Krishna became known as Shamananda. And all of those titles, honorific titles, were given by Jiva Goswami, and he sent them back to Bengal, and they had a cart, they had a big cart with all the scriptures that had been written. In those days, everything was written by hand. Had great trouble, and they came through a land which was ruled by a king named Virhanvira. And a lot of the people in his kingdom, and even the king himself, are kind of like robbers. They maintain themselves by robbing people that would pass through. So, in a dream one night, the king was told that there's these 3 guys, they're passing through on the way to Ben, and they had this huge treasure in this cart. It was covered over. So while Shamananda and Narottam Das and Srinivas Thakur were sleeping, the gundas, the thugis, the thugs of the king, stole the cart. And they woke up the next morning and their life was at an end. I mean, they were just like, the books are gone! Oh my God! Later on, Narottam Das Thakur, I believe, was giving a Bhagavatam class. The king, of course, saw those books. It was books. It wasn't the treasure he thought it. It was a different type of a treasure. And some or other, the king heard about one of the 3 was giving these wonderful talks on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he put 2 and 2 together, and he figured out that these were the guys that he'd stole the books from. And he came and he returned the books, and he bowed down, he begged forgiveness, and he became their disciples. So obviously this really helped the preaching in Bengal, because he's one of the kings of the area, one of the adjoining areas. And so what was originally a disaster turned out to be quite a coup. So all in all, Jiva Goswami wrote more than 25 books. He laid the philosophical foundation for Vaishnavism. He wrote 3 books of grammar called Vyakarana. He wrote 9 dramas about Radha Krishna Leela called Stava. He wrote 1 book about Leela. He wrote 6 books, which are called tikas or commentaries, and then a Harinamamrita Vyakarana is just names of God, just names of God. Sometimes they're juxtaposed in such a way as to teach grammar. And then he wrote 9 sandarpas, which are also a kind of a commentary. He died in 1608. His deity, Radha Damodar, is still being worshipped in the Radha Damodar Temple of Vrindavan. His Samadhi tomb is on the grounds of the Radha Damodar Temple, and his Bhajan Kutir is preserved in Radhakund near Lalitakund. And here's the layout of the Radha Damodar Temple, and you'll see here, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Samadhi is here, the Bhajan Kutir of Rupa Goswami, the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami, and this is number 9. This is where Prabhupada stayed. Prabhupada stayed in 2 rooms. He rented those rooms for 9 years while he translated Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada, while he sojourned in Vrindavan, was a very, very respected personality. In fact, the mayor of Vrindavan at that time was one named Vishwambhar Goswami. And he was a wonderful friend of Srila Prabhupada's. And he came to America twice. I was in Los Angeles and I was doing a radio show. And I interviewed him twice. And he just spoke so lovingly of Srila Prabhupada. And this was before Prabhupada went to America. Anyone knew how great he would be in a world context. They loved him as their own dear sadhu in Vrindavan. In fact, those radio shows that I do still come onto our internet radio. They were digitalized a number of years ago from the cassette. So they're in the system of rotation. They come up periodically. So these are ISKCON devotees. You know, they're doing the Parikram. They're going around Vrindavan, visiting all the holy places. And practically when you go to Vrindavan, the first place you go is Radhadhara Temple, because that's where it all started. That's where the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was conceived and planned by Prabhupada. And that's where he left from to get on the boat and come to America. And here's the deities. Here's a little closer view of the deity. This deity, as I mentioned, is only 8 inches tall. The first traveling bus program to go around America was Brahmacharis. They named the deity Radhadamodar. And I believe after the bus program was wound up, that those Radhadamodar deities ended up in Gitanagari, Pennsylvania. That's it. That's the story of Jiva Goswami as best I could put it together.